Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with producer Jason DeFilippo. On the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most brilliant and interesting people and turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. I want to help you see the matrix when it comes to how these amazing people think and how they behave. And we want you to become a better thinker as well. If you're new to the show, we've got episodes with CEOs, spies, athletes, authors, thinkers, performers, as well as toolboxes for negotiation, public speaking, body language, persuasion, influence, etc. So if you're smart and you like to learn and improve, then you'll be at home right here with us. Today's episode was a lot of fun. None other than Dennis Quaid here in the studio today. We grew up with him, basically. His career spans multiple generations, and he's still at it. We spend a fair bit of time discussing how Dennis accesses his emotions when acting, how he draws from his own life experience to become someone else. I also wanted to know how and when he stays in character, especially when he's playing someone dysfunctional, out of control, or abusive. This was a really cool look inside the mind, life, and process of one of the most well-known artists here in Hollywood. If you want to know how I managed to book all these amazing guests for the show, well, check out our course, 6-Minute Networking. It's a free course that teaches you how to make relationships better in your personal and professional life. That's over at jordanharbinger.com/course. And by the way, most of the guests here on the show, they actually subscribe to the course and the newsletter. So come join us and you'll be in great company. All right, here's Dennis Quaid. Your dad's a blue-collar tradesman from Texas, right? He was like a...
Yeah, he owned his own electrical company. He was a contractor.
It doesn't sound like the usual type of dad that's like, go to Hollywood and become an actor, like really supportive of that kind of thing.
Got a little bit of that. My brother was, you know, 3.5 years ahead of me. They came through at University of Houston where he was going to school and for the last picture show to casting. Mm-hmm. That was like 73, 72. And got a part. The Last Picture Show was a pretty amazing movie back then. Ben Johnson was in it, and Sybil Shepherd, and directed by Peter Bogdanovich. And he did that. And then a year later, Bogdanovich called him out to Hollywood to do a small part in What's Up, Doc, which is a Barbra Streisand, Ryan O'Neal movie. And so he stayed. And when my dad finally saw my brother on camera, he said, well, that's my boy.
Ah, interesting.
Because he was a frustrated actor himself. He didn't really know how to do it.
Acting.
Well, he didn't know how to go about really doing, like, moving out to Hollywood, getting an agent and all the rest of that stuff. You know, he thought you just got discovered.
I think a lot of people think that.
I think they do. You know, I really do think they do. And then for me, my brother was like a really good example for me. I didn't know at the time if I wanted to be an actor. That was back during the time where I wanted to be a veterinarian and or a forest ranger. Forest ranger.
You'd be fighting fires right now.
Yes, I would. I'm evacuated from my house right now.
Are you really? Mm-hmm. I saw the smoke when I flew in this morning.
Yeah.
And I was
shocked. Where'd you fly in from?
San Jose.
Yeah.
Yeah. And our flight originally was canceled, and I was like, you got to get me to L.A. I got Dennis Quaid coming here. I can't stand him up for this bullshit fire.
A refugee, I guess you'd call me, right? A vagabond?
Yeah.
An evacuee? That's...
You started...
I am, in fact, Billy Bob and Thornton and I are at the same hotel.
Oh, I was wondering, maybe, you know, you came here originally, slept on your brother's couch, maybe you just back to the same couch.
No, but it's really amazing. I'm staying at this hotel that's off Sunset, and the room I'm staying in occupies the very same space of the first apartment that I lived in here in L.A.
Really?
Yes.
What are the odds of that?
Paloma. I mean, I don't know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Are you happy
about... You think
that's
a sign of something?
I'm not one of those... I don't, like, believe in that stuff, really.
You don't believe in coinkydinks?
Coincidences exist for sure.
You don't think it goes beyond that?
Nah.
You sure you're not looking deep enough?
Maybe, but maybe you chose that place because of that reason, subconsciously.
That does knock the odds down a little bit.
Yeah.
You're right, because I'm familiar with that place.
Right. Like, maybe you went, you know, I know this neighborhood. I'll just, is there a hotel there? Oh, yeah, look at this one.
Yeah, how about that? I'm right in the same place. Oh, okay.
Yeah, like your subconscious brain saw it coming a mile away.
All right, I'll let that one go then.
So, all right. So you started bugging agents for interviews, getting rejected everywhere when you first got out here?
I came out here. I got my 8x10s done, and I sent out that in a kind of hyperbole of a resume to every agent in town.
A bullshitty resume?
And, yes. Oh, because I had done nothing except, you know, college drama. And I got turned down by everybody. So then I started looking in Variety and Hollywood Reporter in the back. They would have this section called Films in the Future. And it would list who the casting director was, who the director was, and the name of the film. And so I started calling casting directors' offices just to try to get an interview in general.
Oh, man. And what a grind.
So, yeah, I would call them up, and 9 out of 10 would say no, but 1 would say yes. And then I first couple, I went in and had an interview for nothing except just to have an interview. And I looked at my shoes.
The whole time?
Well, the first couple of them, because I didn't know what to say, right, or what to do, but I learned how to do interviews that way.
Step 1, don't look at your shoes. Like, what charisma this man has.
You got to kind of figure it out.
Why didn't you give up? A lot of people, I think, give up pretty quickly in this town once they figure out how hard it is to make it.
I don't know. I guess I had a lot of ambition, and I had a real purpose that I was never going to work as anything else but an actor. I'd been out here a couple of summers before visiting my brother, and, you know, I parked cars over on Santa Monica Boulevard. And this time I was just going to be an actor. So it was about 9 months. And when one of those casting directors who originally turned me down, Gino Havens, I met with him and he called an agent for me who had turned me down.
Sure.
But by his recommendation, I got an agent. And 3 months later, I got a job.
That's crazy. Wow. You must have been jumping up and down on Randy's couch after that.
Yeah, I was off Randy's couch by that time. He didn't put up with that but for about a couple of months. But yes, I was. And then I got a job about a year later after that, and then another job, and then I got Breaking Away. Things really changed.
Yeah, that was kind of the breakout hit. And I know you've said the second chances, the third and the fourth, are what you need to have success as an actor. You got to have a large capacity for rejection.
Yes.
While it still feels as bad today as it always did, I'm able to let it go.
Yes, it does.
It still feels just as bad.
Huh? Oh, yes.
Dang.
Yes, of course. Doesn't it to you?
Yeah. I just figured
when
some point
tells
in the future.
You, hey, we're out of the carrot cake. We don't have any more.
Yeah.
You really wanted it. Doesn't that make you feel bad?
It does. I take that personally.
Yeah.
But I'm learning to let that go. I just figured it got easier over time.
Yeah.
Yes, it does? Or never?
No.
No. Shit.
No. Otherwise, I'd be retired.
I suppose that's true, right?
You know, you still got to have fire in your belly.
How do you feel about having fire in your belly now versus like 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, it's so much more fun.
Now?
I've got to the place in my career where I'm not trying to get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm already there. I already missed it. One of the two. And I'm just having a fun time doing roles, the different types of roles. And, you know, music is really starting to blossom in my life as well. If fear goes up my spine when I'm offered something, that means I should probably do it.
Oh, yeah. Just kind of that's the sign.
To get yourself out of the, you know, I know so many actors that spend their entire careers with the same haircut.
Yeah.
Think about it.
That's kind of scary. The same haircut basically meaning you're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Yeah.
Works for a select few action
heroes.
Yes, it
does really work really well for a select few because that's who you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't that guy.
Yeah.
Because I had bad hair days.
Yeah. Those guys are always like action heroes, right? It's like Schwarzenegger
or
Stallone or something.
Yeah,
it's
or
pretty
comedians.
Similar. Comedians, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If they stay relevant the whole time. That's what's scary about comedy.
Staying relevant, I guess, is really kind of the main thing.
Yeah.
Throughout a career, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I have some questions about that, obviously, as well, because I'm like, is there any time that you're thinking, oh, crap, what if I'm not relevant anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, what if I'm losing relevance? I know you
said felt that way.
Yeah?
Yes.
In the 90s, I know you said, yeah, valid.
Yes, 90s, and about 5, 6 years ago, I felt that way. I think it's that if you're in the arts, or even just, I think, growing as a person in the many different stages of your life, you need to change yourself about every 7 years, what they call a 7-year itch, I think.
I have heard that.
That's the only way to kind of grow at something. Do you agree?
I mean, I don't know about the 7-year thing. For me, I feel like it's been more quick than that, but that's because I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do.
Yeah, but people hate change right off the bat. I do. When somebody comes in and tells me they're going to change the thing that fits right into my routine really well, I'm going to be dragged kicking and screaming into it. But it's a good thing. It's like Shiva, you know, who burns down the destroyer so something new can come along.
If you're in a career valley in the 90s, right, are you at that point thinking, oh, crap, I'm going to be irrelevant? Or are you like, crap, I'm going to die broke? Or is it a little bit of both?
I was thinking, I better get my ass out there and hustle. So that's what I did.
Yeah. Is it motivation from fear or is it motivation from...
Fear, yeah.
Yeah,
fear is a great motivator.
I agree with that.
Fantastic motivator.
Yeah.
Probably the best one we have.
I think you're probably right. At least for someone like me, it's like that fire burning behind me. There's a little bit of fire, you know, internal, like driven ambition, like you said, but some of it is just it's going to catch you.
Yeah, and your fear doesn't have to be based on anything that's logical.
No.
Or it's even usually really not. Real, as long as you feel it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Use it, and it doesn't just over consume you in some way.
Yeah, you got to learn how to control it.
How do you control it then? I mean, or you
let
just,
go.
You just let of the outcome.
You let go. Like right before you go on stage, I get stage fright or jitters or whatever.
Do you really?
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially if I'm doing something I knew. So just right before you go on stage, I just take that fear and put it right down because it really makes you focus. Take a breath, maybe a prayer, and just let go and step out.
You've done like 100, literally like 100 movie roles, right? And you still feel jitters when is it the lights, the cameras? What is it?
I don't know so much about that. Like the first day I might, getting to learn the crew, and it takes me about 3 or 4 days to really feel like I fit in with the crew and the character really started to take shape from what I thought it was to the actual reality of where the location was, who are the other people and things like that.
You ever get intimidated working with someone else? Like, oh man, they're really good. I hope they think I'm good too. Do you have that sort of judgment voice in your head?
Yeah. Oh, sure. In music and in acting. More so in music, really, because I was more focused on acting. That was the thing that really paid the bills.
Yeah. So this music being your second act, it's like, am I the real deal or am I just one of those guys who's like hacking it and everyone's humoring me? Like I worry about things like that.
Yeah. But it's amazing how the very best people are the easiest people to work with, really.
They are
the easiest people to work with. Acting is reacting. And if they're so good, if you just let go react, it just winds up being easy.
That's something I think non-actors like me don't really kind of fully comprehend. For me, it just seems kind of terrifying to work with anybody who's really good at something because I can't turn that voice off, or I haven't been able to turn that voice off that's like, better pull your weight, man.
Yeah, well, the voice is always going on in your head, right? Yeah, you have to tell it to shut up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. The only time it turns off is like maybe right now. But that's because if I have it going now, I'm screwed. This
like
conversation
you were intimidated about doing this interview with me and now you're getting kind of used to it?
Yeah, I mean, on the plane, I was like, don't blow it.
Is there anything I can do about that?
No. It's it's before literally like any interview too. It could be like a scientist, unless I really don't. It's a good sign.
I really get, when I talk to really substantial people.
Yeah.
Like, politicians who I admire or there's not many to admire these days, by the way.
Which would that?
Or great figures that I grew up, you meet them and I feel small.
Yeah, I think that's like a universal feeling that everyone probably has, especially any kind of creative personality always will have that.
Yeah.
I've heard you say you think mythically for your characters. You create a backstory and everything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you still do this?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you writing it down? Is it all in your head?
I used to fill up notebooks, but in acting, you're always playing yourself, no matter what. I mean, you can lose yourself supposedly in a character and all that, but you're still you doing that. For instance, like when you see The Godfather, you don't see The Godfather, you see Marlon Brando.
Sure, yeah.
It's Marlon Brando. And he'll always be Marlon Brando in every movie. And the only thing that makes a difference is because it's Marlon Brando playing that part. If you put Jack Nicholson in it, it'd be very different.
Sure.
Because it'd be Jack Nicholson.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Losing yourself in a part is something that non-actors for sure don't understand. I mean, when I see Joaquin Phoenix in Joker, I'm like, is that what's happening there? Because he's so good, but he's also very strange in interviews.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why they chose him.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm not playing the Joker.
No, it would be...
Because I don't really give that off.
No, it would be kind
of... It's a sight
of more of a Bruce Wayne than a Joker.
Yes, I guess you're right. As long as I'm not Robin. But it's always like a piece of your personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Intellectually, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Me acting will probably never. I mean, even now, basically just who I am, even at home, I just have better questions and fewer dad jokes. Fewer dad jokes.
You sure about that?
No. No, I am not.
Same here.
Yeah.
I use my best material on my 11-year-olds and I just get the stare back like,
Yeah.
Waiting for the punchline.
Do you think internally they're laughing and they just don't want to give you the satisfaction?
No. Damn. No, they're really, they can't help but be honest about
it. Damn, I was kind of hoping, they secretly think I'm really funny. They just don't want to give me the satisfaction of laughing.
Yeah.
Keep lying to yourself.
The hardest place to get respect is at home. We all know right?
Yeah.
You got kids.
I do, but he's only 3 months old, but I have cousins and nieces.
Oh, welcome to the club.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Yeah. He's 3 months old. He doesn't do much. He grabs and cries.
Your life is over.
I'm fine with it.
It's all about him.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful thing about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's a great thing that kids teach is that you take the attention off of yourself, which we're all prone to do.
Yeah.
And you put it on someone else.
It's nice because I have like a really good reason to get rid of all this narcissistic bullshit of I've got to have this many on Instagram and worry about, it's like, look, focus on this stuff. This is important. And then that relationship with him is the most important.
Right.
And with my wife.
And with your wife.
All this
other
crap.
Relationship with the wife comes first, I think.
I think you're right about
because
that.
Because if mom ain't happy, nobody's happy.
Plus, nobody takes care of mom, right? If you're both taking care of the kid, then she's kind of neglected and that's the end of that.
That's right.
Nobody wants that. I've heard that when you're on screen, you err on the side of doing too much and the director pulls you back in.
Yeah.
So what does that really mean?
That means, like, get out there and go over the top.
Like overacting,
kind of? Kind of, yeah. That's what will come out is, like, overacting. Maybe not on a stage, but on film. And so I like to go out there and really just do something over the top. I don't mind being bad. You got all kinds of film. And if I'm working, with the right director, of course, they're going to protect me if I trust them.
Yeah.
The director is the one who's watching you. But he's the one that's telling the story. So he'll just bring him back in. So I'll do maybe one less and one in the middle, and I'm ready. I'm fine.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Dennis Quaid. We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored in part by Xero. I've been using Xero for years here in the company. It's cloud-based accounting software, and I've said a lot about this in the past, but Jen loves this stuff. Xero is in the cloud. It means you can access it wherever you are, provided you have access to the internet, which you probably do everywhere, and you can access it at the same time without needing to worry about backups and version control. So if you have a problem with a bookkeeping entry, you contact them and they'll sort it out. That doesn't sound like much, but it's a big deal when you're trying to reconcile transactions and you don't know what's what. Having them be able to help you is a huge, huge deal. Also, they take information direct from your online banking. That means you don't have to ever worry about making a mistake typing numbers in. There's no more decimal errors. It saves bucket loads of time. It's more accurate, and it saves, if you don't have data entry people on payroll, well, that saves you money there too. Xero's always up to date. It uploads your bank information every day, securely, of course, so you can see exactly where you are financially whenever you want. You can make informed business decisions rather than relying on last week's data or gut feeling and all that stuff. And they have an app, easy to use on the go. You can be on the train and sending out sales invoices to your customers. No more waiting to get back in the office for this. So it's a great product. I highly recommend it. Jason?
Try Xero risk-free at Xero.com/Jordan. That's Xero with an X. Xero.com/Jordan. It's free for the first month and also 25% off 3 months after the trial. That's Xero.com/Jordan.
This episode is also sponsored by Skillshare. I love the idea of Skillshare and I love Skillshare as a product. Getting out of the rut, staying creative, it's easier said than done, especially when you have a busy schedule. Skillshare is an online learning community for the creator in all of us. They have thousands of classes in photography, creative writing, design, productivity. You can get inspired and join something. You can create something you love, or you can just grab an on-demand class, learn at your own pace, something you've always wanted to learn. I recommend making a list of something you've always wanted to learn and then dive in a little bit each week. Why not? Do an hour a week of something you've always wanted to learn. Jason, I know you're a fan of the Skillshare.
Yeah, I'm using it for Photoshop right now. I mean, I've been using Photoshop since version 2, but I took a few years off and the new version has so much stuff in it. It's great for a refresher course. So I just grabbed a Photoshop course. It's teaching me all the new stuff. So I'm really happy with how I can just get back up to speed on something that I'm just a little rusty at. It's really helpful.
Jen uses it for everything from how to create custom stuff in Instagram to SEO, which is taught by Rand Fishkin, who's a great guy and obviously the man when it comes to SEO. Social media strategies taught by Gary Vee. There's modern marketing in there taught by Seth Godin. So it's not just like some schmo at home
recording a class that's legit. Jason, tell them where they can get a deal on Skillshare.
Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare and get 2 months free when you sign up at Skillshare.com/Harbinger. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started today by heading to Skillshare.com/Harbinger to sign up. That's Skillshare.com/Harbinger. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. And to learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard from our amazing sponsors, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. Don't forget, we have a worksheet for today's episode so you can make sure you solidify your understanding of the key takeaways from Dennis Quaid. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. If you'd like some tips on how to subscribe to the show, just go to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. Subscribing to the show is absolutely free. It just means that you get all of the latest episodes downloaded automatically to your podcast player so you don't miss a single thing. And now back to our show with Dennis Quaid.
So you think you became a better actor when you had kids because you could let go of some of that other stuff that we were talking about before?
I don't know.
I feel like I'm becoming a better interviewer just because I have more shit to talk about. But that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
There's more to relate to that's not just my own stuff, and that's more interesting for other people, I think.
Something we all share. And certainly, you know, about I saw Al Pacino. He's played a couple of dads. This is back in the 70s. And I didn't really believe him as a dad.
He doesn't have kids, right?
He may now, but back then he did not have kids. And there's something about it. You know, if you, it's like you really got to have that experience to kind of like have that feel, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. You had kids in The Parent Trap, right? I mean, not the movie, but before that?
You'd already Jack had kids. Was, I think, 4 or 5 years old.
Right. Because yeah. I was going to say, you're a believable dad in that movie.
Yes.
I don't know.
In fact, I was the dad for quite a bit.
Yeah, that makes more sense. That makes more sense. Because otherwise, you're right. There's something
played
that's not...
Played a lot of dads, played a few coaches.
I could see that, too. Know. The, like, coach seeking redemption kind of thing, maybe a little.
Yes. Coach second chances.
Yeah.
Coach seeking redemption, which is a great story.
Well, you've said that once the cameras are on you, you can read your mind. You don't actually have to act. That sounds cryptic to non-actors. Like, what does that mean? Does that sort of go back to what you mean by, hey, you're playing yourself? It just sort of comes out?
I don't learn the lines. I mean, I know the script. I've read the script maybe 3 or 4 times and really thought about it. But going onto the set that day, I really don't know the lines. Because in film, you're going to shoot, what, 2, 3 page scene, right? So I listen to the other person, what they're saying, and that kind of tells me where they're going, what I'm going to say. Makes you a better listener.
So you're kind of improvising that stuff?
No, I'm just sitting there just trying to be in the frame and just be paying attention to what's going on and knowing the character. See, I know the character. It's about listening. And then I'm lucky I'm able to, I've always been like that. I've been able to memorize things pretty quickly.
You don't memorize the lines before you go in? Did I misunderstand?
No, I don't.
So you just
I've read the scene. I may read it. But I really don't really have a...
Wow. That's incredible. How much of acting is improvised like that versus like...
Well, it's not improvising. It's just listening.
Yeah.
After about 2 or 3 rehearsals of going through it, you're blocking and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You're listening to what they say. Then you react because acting is reacting.
So somebody has to start though, right? Yeah. So is somebody there
your starting point and you got the script supervisor over there.
And they're like, here's Dennis.
Yeah.
For sure didn't learn any of the lines.
What do you think De Niro... I think De Niro, like, you know, those... Like, hey, you're talking to me? You're talking to me? I know you're talking to me. You must be talking to me because he's just vamping, I think, because he didn't know the lines.
And I'm like, just keep it.
Doesn't a lot until it comes up.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. I feel like you can only get away with that when you've hit a certain stature, though. Otherwise, you're just that guy who, like, never bothers to learn the free lines.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So you have to go out there and know the entire script before I got there when because I wanted to be asked back.
Maybe that's why it's more fun now because you show up and you go, they're not going to fire me. I can listen really well.
I don't know about that.
You don't know about that?
Yeah. I don't know about
Maybe
that.
It's good not to be.
Yeah, you really can't be thinking that I'm above all this.
Yeah. We've seen how that works out with other people, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Just try being 2 hours late.
Yeah.
4 times in a row.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That somebody will draw the line there.
Yeah. They're going to take umbrage of that.
You use a lot of different accents in many of your films. I'm curious how you learn and practice those.
My brother and I grew up doing impersonations like Ed Sullivan and John Wayne and... you know, everybody that was around us. So I think that's the whole voice thing. And
plus,
I've been able to travel so much in my life that I pick up wherever I go, I pick up on accents badly even. You know, like in India, I will be talking
oh, man.
Just the way, a little bit, you know. And it's something I kind of can't help a little bit.
Yeah, I feel
just pick up on other people's.
I've done that before and had friends go, I think you're making fun. That was weird. You're making fun of the cab driver. I'm like, I'm not making fun of him. I'm like, you're talking like the cab driver who's from Samoa or something. So it makes no sense. It's not like an Irish accent or anything. It just creeps in subconsciously.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make fun of anybody or anything like that. I guess subconsciously, I'm just fascinated by voices.
Are you the guy that hears one on TV and then spends the rest of the week annoying everybody in the house?
I prepare in secret.
So like you're in the shower going, one more, Jimmy. One more, Jimmy.
Hey, Hootsman, one more. I can't get her to go, Captain.
That one's awesome. That's definitely good. There's a reason you get paid the big bucks for these and I don't. That's for sure. I heard you studied Mandarin, too. There's no way
actually, I don't know how that creeped into my
bio. It's in Wikipedia, yeah.
That was like creeped into my bio like something like 35 years ago, and it stayed there.
So it's just not true.
I've even had attempts to remove it, please. I don't speak Mandarin. I've never attempted to, but it's still there.
God, yeah, it's in your IMDb. Studied Mandarin at like university or high school, maybe.
Yeah, like Jim Morrison saying his parents were dead, you know.
It just never goes away.
Well, it's just something that sticks, and they print the legend.
That's true. I know you like to learn everything there is about the person you're playing. You kind of mentioned that earlier. What's the process like? What resources are you using to do that? What was it like before Google, for example? You can't just be like, tell me everything about Wyatt Earp.
Right.
You had to do it manually.
You actually had to use it like a telephone. And
yeah.
You got a telephone book and, you know, and track people down. I guess the first time that really happened to me was Gordo Cooper and The Right Stuff. It was my first, like, real person. Turned out he lived 3 miles from me in L.A. So,
wow.
Yeah. He was one of the Mercury 7 astronauts, the last person actually to fly alone in space from liftoff to splashdown. And he was up there 3 days. And what a great guy. He was my hero when I was a kid. And I went over and met him and I just, you know, watched the way he walked, you know, kind of get a general idea about how he is in life, you know. How we feel basically inside ourselves, if we're basically confident or basically this or basically happy or basically whatever, then I try to capture the spirit of a person. I mean, you also have this script that you're doing, which is not all factual.
Yeah, somewhat fictional.
That would be way too much. Because, I mean, even my life is not all factual.
Apparently not. You don't even know Mandarin.
Yeah.
Like, who am I even talking to right now?
And, so I just try to capture the spirit of that person and then think a little bit about what if somebody did my story.
Yeah.
There's a certain respect that goes with that. I try to do the character from their point of view because that's what we're doing right here, isn't it?
Yeah.
You and me.
That's a good point, right? Because you don't want to do it from – there's no reason to do it from anyone else's perspective.
No, otherwise you're editorializing on him.
Yeah, which could be kind of offensive. I mean, some people might think it's cool because you're playing them up, but it's also inaccurate, which is like less useful somehow. Yeah, that makes sense. Aside from the script, are you looking for other resources? Aside from the script and the person, like if I'm interviewing an author here on the show, I read the book, talk to their friends if I can, watch them talk about their work with other people, because you get a different angle than just the source, right?
Right. Yeah, a little bit of the mystery is kind of the curtain is.
Yeah.
Well, I went to see Gordo, and then because of that, I learned to fly. He gave me an instructor to call over at Van Nuys Airport, and I went over there, and it was Bud Wallen. Bud Wallen at that time in the 80s was 74 years old. I think it was about 3 years younger than aviation itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was afraid to fly, but I learned to fly, which helped me with a radio voice, which is what all those guys had on that radio. You know,
the talking into the
454 Delta Quebec.
That's awesome.
Landing with Charlie.
You built that from flying your own plane.
Well, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Bud's plane at the time.
Well, he was an instructor.
You had your own plane, though, did you not? Or you still do?
Yes, I had made it all the way. I kept going. I made it up to jets, flying Citation jets.
My friend had one of those, and he goes, the only thing I regret more than selling that jet for the price I sold it is buying that jet for the price that I paid for it.
I was very lucky that they're so darn convenient.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But they just suck every dollar you have. And the most expensive part of flying is when the plane is in the hangar.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not being used. So your price per hour goes way up.
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that.
Because you're still paying insurance. And,
sure.
Well, this is fascinating subject matter, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I mean, I think it's
I'm
going
to start to sell you some insurance.
Yeah, for the plan that I'll never
have.
It's
going to be surprisingly painless.
Are there real people in the stories you're performing on set with you? Like, when do you have Gordo stand there and go, eh, it's not really what I did, or at least just watching you do it?
Gordo never came to set, but Jerry Lee did. He was there every day over my shoulder saying, you're getting it wrong, son.
Oh, that'd be an... Yeah.
Does but he was also one of my piano teachers.
Really?
Yeah. You know, he would slow it down and show me licks. And gosh, that was an incredible time.
I bet. Yeah. Does that affect the performance? I mean, obviously, this is a dumb question. Of course, it affects a performance if he's saying, you're getting it wrong, son, over your shoulder. I'd feel self-conscious even if they weren't saying
Oh,
anything.
For sure it did. There was a little bit of a schoolyard bully at him.
I've heard that. You hear that.
Yeah. And it was also, he's a perfectionist. He really wanted it to be right. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him. So I didn't play piano a year before I got that. I was lucky. For one thing, I was on cocaine back in those days. So I sat at the piano for 12 hours a day. And that's
you
all
get really
I did.
Good at the piano, yeah.
Yeah.
So just the piano, then...
Yeah, in the end, he and I wound up doing two duets.
Was he doing cocaine with you on the piano?
No, he didn't do cocaine.
No?
No.
Oh, that surprises
I don't know
me
what
somehow.
He did.
You don't know what he did?
I don't know what he did.
Gotcha.
I'm not going to speak for him.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That would be...
Yeah. He had a stroke. About 9 months ago.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's less.
He's recovering, and I think he's going to come back. He's 87 years old.
God, that's some of these guys, like, they just last forever. There's that joke with Keith Richards where, like, Adam and Eve are there with God, and it's like, who's
right.
that?
Yeah,
he was
right.
here when I got here.
Yeah, everybody thought that Jerry would be the first to go. Keith, too. We're probably going to outlast everybody.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, do you ever bring your work home with you? I mean, it seems like...
I used to.
Yeah?
I don't anymore. That's how you wind up in rehab and stuff like that. Or I have to drop it. I used to live the role and stuff like that all just about all the time. It's just too much. I found that I could actually be better if I would just like drop it like a hot potato,
mm-hmm.
even in between takes, not even think about it in between takes, and just come back to it. You just come back with a clear head that way.
What tools do you use to get into character quickly then if you're dropping in and out of it even between takes?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Try to be there. That's all. You just try to be there.
So when it's rolling, you're there. When it's not rolling, you're back to yourself because you're present. You're not thinking about the...
You're focused and you're just be there in the frame. That's why they hired you.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's why they hire you. Yeah, they're not going to hire me for that.
Well, they would hire you for a specific type. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
even
true.
Even if you had no lines or anything, you look like this and we're going to have... She's going to come up and she's going to proposition you and... You know what I mean? And you react like you.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe you'll turn red, you know.
Sounds right.
Whatever. You know,
you'll
turn it on. But that's why they hired you. Because you naturally, although you may not be that way, but on the outside, people have a tendency to type people.
That's for sure true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I told my wife today, she goes, why don't you wear that orange shirt? And I was like, it looks like those are like dad clothes. She goes, that's fine. He has kids. That's what she said. I was like, okay. And then you show up in like this cool leather jacket. And I'm like, fuck, I knew it. I knew it. I should have worn something cool.
Just like, I had these pair of Merrells that I wore for like 12 years during my dad years. I thought they were pretty cool until I found out they weren't.
Yeah, you find out the hard way. Like, hey, Dad, we threw away your shoes because we're sick of looking at them. Oh, man. Dang it.
Yeah.
When you're playing someone...
Hey, I'm just going to dress like Seinfeld.
Yeah, that worked for him. When you're playing someone with serious emotional issues, like the abusive father in that film, I Can Only Imagine, you don't stay in character all day, huh?
Not. In fact, I like to keep a distance in between takes, just complete emotional distance. Same time being very careful, especially we had a kid in it who was 12. And so wouldn't be very, very careful about, you know, setting it up and didn't want the kid to really freak out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That could be really scary because even though they know what's going on, you can't really stop yourself from emotionally reacting to somebody.
Well, for kids.
For kids,
I can. I'm a grown man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But he's 12.
I know I'm doing it, so I'm doing this just concerned about him. At the same time, trying to be an abusive father. But Bart was on the set for that. Bart Millard, you know, was his story. And that must have been a very difficult thing for him to watch.
Yeah, I can imagine. But I guess he kind of hopefully knew what he was in for. It just seems really tough to watch.
Yeah, I would think. But that was a story of redemption, that's for sure.
Yeah. You do see a lot of child actors seem like they never got a chance to just, like, go throw spitballs and play soccer in the backyard. Like, they're working.
Yeah. True.
Which is strange for me, having grown up in Michigan with no child actor friends.
Right, right.
They're just like aliens now yeah. when I meet them.
Yeah, I thought that's what I would go with. I would go with kind of my own childhood, which is what we do, I think. We go with our own childhood to raise our other kids, including, well, I'm not going to be that way
yeah.
with my kids the, yeah. way, the way my parents were.
I'm going to screw my kid up.
A few times I'm going, oh, yeah. now I understand why they were that way.
Definitely, yeah. Like, I want to screw my kid up in my own way, not in the way my dad and mom did.
Yeah.
Got my own brand of dysfunction. Yeah.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Dennis Quaid. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by Yousician. This is a new sponsor, and I think this is such a brilliant idea. 7 out of 10 adults wish they played a musical instrument. I'm definitely in that camp. I've thought about this a lot. I do like singing, which Yousician also has. But unfortunately, many people never do learn how to do this. They think it's too late. They think it's too expensive. They feel like they don't have the time. Some of those things can be true, but Yousician is perfect whether you're just starting out or you've been playing for years, because it's not just like, here, play this weird classical thing that over and over again. They have thousands of popular songs, expertly crafted lessons and exercises, dozens of genres. You can learn music theory, sheet reading, tablature too if you want to do that, or you can just jam. And compared to private lessons, Yousician is more affordable and, of course, lets you learn on your own schedule whenever you want. It's designed to be fun and addictive, so it's kind of like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, but with real instruments. They really do have a lot. Guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, and like I said, singing is where I'm at with it. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, they really do have 24/7 access to step-by-step video tutorials from world-class educators. The lessons are bite-sized. They're easy to follow instructions. They're exercises tailored to your goals. So you're not going to have to, like, sit down and play for 90 minutes. I mean, you can take 10, 15 minutes, a half an hour, and you can take a singing, music, piano, guitar lesson with Yousician. And you start playing right away. It's not a bunch of sit down and memorize it before you can actually do anything. I think this is kind of the future of music education, if I had to guess. No more waiting in line for old Millie down the street to teach your kid piano. Just throw him an iPad and sit him in front of the keyboard, and this is a hell of a lot more fun. Jason?
If you've been wanting to learn an instrument or simply want some help getting back to playing, check out Yousician. You can get an extended 14-day free trial of their Premium Plus package at Yousician.com/Jordan. That's unlimited lessons and unlimited songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Just go to Yousician.com/Jordan to start your free trial today. That's Yousician.com/Jordan.
This episode is also sponsored by Figs. These are so fun. I love these. There's something we can all agree on. Nurses, doctors, dentists, people who work in medicine and healthcare are pretty awesome. All of us can think of a time when a medical professional helped us, helped a family member. But those scrubs, those are like gnarly pillowcases, ill-fitting. Half of them don't have pockets. They've got little frickin' Kleenex drawstrings that rip when you pull them too hard. I mean, this is just the stuff they're wearing is just absolute garbage sometimes. And that's just not fair. It is not fair. Figs is an amazing company that is making scrubs stylish and functional for the people who deserve it most. No more scratchy pants and shirts. Not only were these things ugly and uncomfortable, but they weren't innovative at all. I mean, these things probably haven't changed since the freaking 40s. Figs creates the highest quality medical apparel so that medical professionals look their best, feel their best, perform at their best every day. Moisture-wicking stuff, soft stuff, four-way stretch, odor control. Nobody wants a smelly doctor or nurse, for that matter. Orderlies, you guys are stinky. It's not your fault. Get some Figs. Handle that problem. They're made with yoga waistbands and come in a variety of styles from classic to straight leg to joggers to skinny styles. And Figs gives back, and you can too. Every time you shop at Figs, they give scrubs to healthcare providers in need around the world through Threads for Threads, which is their initiative to make sure that even orderlies in third world countries don't stink because of their scrubs. They've donated hundreds of thousands of sets in over 35 countries. I think third world, Jason, is no longer an acceptable nomenclature, but we're just going to let that slide for now because I'm trying to talk about Figs that make great gifts for the lifesavers in your life. So even if you're not a doctor, nurse, dentist, dermatologist, pediatrician, you can gift one to somebody who is. Jason, where can they get a deal on the Figs?
So whether you're one of the awesome humans that work in healthcare or someone that wants to say thanks to these deserving folks, Figs is going to make that easy by providing you with 15% off your first purchase by using our code JHS. Get ready to love your scrubs. Head to wearfigs.com. That's WEARFIGS.com and enter our code JHS at checkout.
This episode is also sponsored in part by ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process, and Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, he needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. So he switched to ZipRecruiter because he was having trouble finding some qualified candidates. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. It identifies people with the right experience and then invites them to apply for your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Also, they have a rating feature, and you can use those to filter your applicants so you can focus on the relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Jason?
See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Jordan. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Jordan. ZipRecruiter.com/JORDAN. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thank you for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers keeps us on the air. To learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard so you can check out those amazing sponsors, visit JordanHarbinger.com/deals. And don't forget the worksheet for today's episode. That link is in the show notes at JordanHarbinger.com/podcast. And if you're listening to us in the Overcast player, please click that little star next to the episode. We really appreciate it. And now for the conclusion of our episode with Dennis Quaid.
When you married Meg Ryan, her career took off slightly after that. Did that affect your marriage in any sort of negative way? Like, I know there's probably some dialogue of like, oh, well, you know, look how well she's doing. Well, we know who pays that mortgage. I don't think people literally say that, but it seems like I would worry about that.
Only the haters.
The haters?
Well, if I'm to be honest, I really have to admit that Meg and I, we had a beautiful relationship, and we were together for 13 years. And when we first met, you know, I was the one with my 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know,
but
there on the actor of the moment, you know,
mm-hmm.
I guess. During our relationship, that got transcended. She did Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle and all those. You know, I'd gone to rehab and gotten myself straight and cleaned. And I thought, well, now things are going to really work out okay. And they don't.
You know, oh,
yeah, it turns into like not working for a year just to get on my feet. And then that turned into 2 and then maybe choosing the wrong thing. So I started to feel a little bit like I was disappearing.
Really?
I mean, if I'm really going to be honest about it, you know what I mean? I thought, well, I'm never going to be. I'm too big of a person to ever feel that way, you know? But I did. I would feel, a little bit like I was disappearing.
Did it scare you to make you more angry or something else?
I guess it made me sad, but I also felt like, oh, well, I can't admit this.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Especially not to your wife.
At the same time, it's so obvious.
Like you're the last, maybe everyone.
Yeah, we're walking down the streets in New York and everybody's going, Meg! Hey, Meg! You know, or they come up and have me hold their purse
Well, I guess they didn't have camera phones back then. Like, hey, can you take a picture of us?
Really funny the first couple of times. But that's what it was. I think it was probably a really good lesson for me in life.
Just like a little humility or something?
I mean, we all go through everything, you know what I mean, whether we admit it or not.
Yeah.
We're all pretty shallow. We're self-serving and self-involved down there at the bottom of it all.
Did that affect your marriage at all? Was it like, no, it's fine that she's getting all the...
Well, yeah, yes, it did. But the real thing was, you know, we're raising Jack and... We wanted to keep his routine right. And so she would go off and do a film, and then I would go off and do a film. And that was back before they had these slick, great cameras. So, you know, a movie would take maybe 4 or 5 months sometimes instead of 8 weeks or 5 weeks to do. So, you know, there was a lot of separation.
Sure.
And that was, I think that was the thing.
Might have been better for Jack that you were around more then, huh?
Oh, that's the wonderful part of it, that, you know, I really got to be the kind of dad that I wanted to be.
Yeah. I guess if you're not suffering from a lot of FOMO or anything at the time and you've got a great kid, then you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
I think most of being a dad is just being there. That's most of it. It's a comforting thing to kids.
That definitely makes sense. And that, you know, a lot of dads have told me the same thing. Like, don't panic about being... super dad all the time. Just show up.
Yeah, really.
Just fucking show up.
You know, and then I'll still have to do your job and keep up your relationship with your partner.
I know music's a big part of your life. You wrote a few songs for 3 of your films, been in a band for like 20 years.
Same guys.
Same guys.
For 19 years, this Halloween. Like,
oh,
right?
Well, happy yeah. Bandiversary.
Well, that's really good.
I you like could steal that. I definitely think I just made that up just now.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you did, too. I've never heard it before.
I've also never heard
it. Wow. It just came out.
Yeah.
See what happens when you relax?
That's right.
Yeah. With the same guys for 19 years. Before that, I've always had a band, really. And I've been a songwriter, I guess, since I was 12. Because I knew I was never going to be like a shredder on a guitar. And so songwriting was sort of my defense, you know, because when you start out playing guitar, it's all about the girls.
Sure.
You
know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, I do.
Yes. So I've always been a writer, but I had a band, which was basically Bonnie Raitt's band back in the 80s called The Eclectics. You should see those photos.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I saw the photos of them now. I can only imagine what they looked like 40 years ago.
But that was a different band. And then around 2000, that was it. Halloween 2000, we started The Sharks.
Because your kid made it. Well, Jack came up with it.
It was Shark Week.
And really? We
were looking for a name for the band, and he was like 9. What should we name our band? He says, Sharks.
Good.
And so I always say, thank God it was a dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably because
that's
dad
the line
jokes.
I always use.
Good dad joke, man. Yeah. I'm going to keep that one in my back pocket. I found it a little surprising that you like Lil Wayne, or is that also some bullshit?
I do like Lil Wayne.
You do?
I think
okay.
He's a genius, man. I really do.
It's a little stuff unexpected. About,
you know, how you take Lil Wayne is another thing, but the stuff that just spouts out of his head, you know. He's coming from his own authentic experience in life without any kind of judgment about what that is. You know, that's where he's coming from. And, man, he can do a hard rhyme. Amazing.
I mean, there's things you just never forget that he says, like, yes, I am wheezy, but I ain't asthmatic. And you just go, wow.
And that stuff
is so good.
He's spouting out of it.
Yeah. Like, Notorious B.I.G. had that effect, too.
Yeah.
You ever listen to that?
Well, you can just do it. And Tupac.
Yes.
Tupac was it.
Yeah. I think I still have pretty much every single word memorized off of the All Eyes on Me double CD.
Mm-hmm.
Just back and forth in my car.
I did a movie with Tupac. It's called Gang Related.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you a police officer in the movie?
No, I was a itinerant bum on the street in downtown LA.
Okay.
Who turned out to be this very wealthy surgeon doctor who would, you know, just gone out on the street because his life blew up. But Tupac played a cop. With Jim Belushi. I didn't know who Tupac was back then. I was not into rap music, really. He was another actor. I mean, I've been told. But he was like 24. And we wound up like having lunch together like every day. We both loved Chinese food. So we ordered it every day because we were down there in Chinatown.
Sure.
And we just wound up like talking. Maybe it's a good thing I didn't know like a bunch of stuff about him because I had no, you know, we talked about our moms. We were both very close to our moms. Maybe in different ways, but very
wow.
And we talked about life and, you know, acting and a little bit of his, you know, background in it and all that stuff. And he was a fantastic guy. He was very smart. He was very sensitive. He was very funny. And God, I think he would have had an incredible career.
I think
in
so.
In music and in acting. He was such a good actor.
He's a super hard worker, too, by all accounts.
He didn't assume anything. He was very, you know, he was on the set, and he was ready to work and ready to go. No bullshit. Just, you know, himself. And very professional.
That stuff is amazing. I mean, when you see that and then you see, like, oh, he got shot by some punk.
That happened, like, what, 4 months later.
It must have been really quickly thereafter.
Shock.
Because he was still a kid when he died. I mean, he was
24 years old.
24, yeah. Yeah, all right. So
incredible.
He's done more.
Well, so was James Dean. He was 24. Buddy Holly was 24.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That makes me feel like I got to get after it. I mean, these guys did more.
Hank Williams was, what, 29?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
You look at their body of work.
Yeah.
And your jaw drops.
27 for musicians is like a terrible sort of first number, too, right?
Yeah.
Jim Morrison?
Yeah, it is 27. Jim Morrison, Mama Cass.
Amy Winehouse.
Jimi Hendrix.
Mm. Yeah. It's a whole different show, I think. As an artist, do you think that you need a wide variety of inputs to create your best output, like you, Lil Wayne, Tupac, and then that goes in and then something up here happens and you can create better?
I don't necessarily think so because, you know, people have made a career out of one thing, but I grew up in Houston, which is sometimes called West Louisiana. You know, you have a very diverse music background if you come from there. You know, you got all that Cajun music and jazz coming over from Louisiana. You know, you've definitely got country and Western music. And my dad was really into, you know, Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby and a lot of church music. I mean, it was so varied. And of course, we all went Beatlemania crazy when they came out. So very diverse.
Is it true that you play with your band in bare feet?
Yes, when we first started out.
What's up with that?
That was, well, I felt like I was in my living room. But that was probably, looking back, a device I used because I didn't feel all that confident up there.
Okay. Oh, so you wanted to be like, I'm at home.
I figured I would try to be anonymously as bad as I could. You know, I didn't really want to bring it to record instead. That's the reason we waited like 18 years to record a record.
Wait, we, what?
Yeah, we waited 18 years to record it because I wanted to give myself time to be bad, make mistakes, and I did.
It seems like a gross thing to do at a bar.
Yes, it is.
You know, like.
Yes, it is, especially when it comes to cut feet, which I never had. But there was blood on the stage sometimes, but not from my feet.
Not from your feet?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was probably a device that I was using.
That's so.
Because I did not feel all that confident.
Do you not wear shoes in your house? You're barefoot at home?
No, I like to wear shoes.
Just not when you play music?
Well, I wear shoes. I've been wearing shoes now for a good 10 years on stage. So I could tell you that I have more confidence up there.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
How do you come up with a device like that? Like, who comes up with that kind of thing? Is it like something you hear? Like, oh, you know, this guy, he doesn't wear shoes.
I don't know. It just happened one night as a lark, and so I kept it. And then a bunch of people mentioned it. So I thought, well, I'll keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For all the guys that doesn't wear shoes up
right there. Yeah. It's hard to hit the football, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah. The Beastie Boys, they don't wear shirts. I won't wear shoes.
How come you never had a Hollywood meltdown? Like, where's the Dennis Quaid tape of you losing your shit at some lighting guy? I saw one, but it looked fake.
I did that hoax.
I saw that.
Where yeah, I actually had people going for about 3 days. It was a Funny or Die video.
Yeah.
That we did, where we set it up and shot it like I was doing a movie. And I wind up just having a meltdown of the set over the slightest little bitty thing. And somebody secretly doing the audio on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we leaked that out there. And of course, everybody, you know, TMZ and all those that he picked up on it. And, you know, well, he's back on drugs or he's this or he's that or whatever he is. You know, we let it go for like 2 days until we released what really happened.
You know, so you
which
had
was
like
a comedy skit, actually, by the way. And then all the talk shows and everything helped us. You know, we used like Billy Bush on Extra or whatever it was mm-hmm. at the time. And Jimmy Kimmel, of course, gave us quite a boost. And it was just funny.
It is funny.
Yeah.
Especially like, you got these two zombies whispering in each other's ears.
Yeah.
I'm a fucking pro.
Really, yeah. And a bunch of.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like, we'll link it in the show notes. I believe it ends with.
It's very funny.
I believe it ends with blow me and the door slamming.
Blow me and then I got to be getting a hairdryer. So.
All right. Well, tell me about the bear in the banjo before your publicist like throws
right.
something at me from across the room.
I think you've got the bio rights to my story now after so long, right? Bear in a Banjo is a podcast that I've been a part of and producing and also acting in. Jared is what I call him, Goodstad, who is my business partner, T-Bone Burnett, and Bob Dylan, who contributed some lyrics, and Pooh Bear,
mm-hmm.
who is, you know, writes for Justin Bieber. It's a true fiction of a story of American musical history. These two characters, Bear and Banjo, starting from in the 20s when everybody dispersed from New York with their portable, finally, recording machines and started recording, you know, music in the country. What if they'd passed the Carter family farm and gone 100 miles down the road? What would music sound like? Now, you know, if there wasn't a Jimmy Rogers, it was somebody else. But Bear and Banjo show up these seminal moments in American musical history. You know, Little Richard and the birth of rock and roll, the blues, you know, in Chicago and Detroit, and even being working with the U.S. Army on sonic warfare. and it was a lot of fun to do, a whole lot of fun to do. And it's, I think it's number two. It's number two.
Yeah,
it has been number right two behind Dolly Parton's. So, and very fun to produce. Doesn't really take a lot of money to do a podcast.
Now you know why I'm in the business.
And exactly. And who knows where it goes from there. So.
So far, so good. Yeah.
It really is sort of like the, like when MTV first came out or Sirius Radio first came out, nobody really knows where it's going, but you know it's going somewhere. And Nobody can tell where it's going to be a year from now. And the audience increased fourfold over just the last year.
Sure.
And tell you the truth, a year and a half ago, I really didn't know what a podcast was. I was probably in a couple.
Yeah.
Knowing that I was.
Sure.
But, you know, it really can be anything. It could be a story, a scripted story. I want to do like radio plays, basically.
Yeah, I wondered
about that. And that's what, like the script in the drawer. Everybody's got a script in the drawer.
That's right. And you don't have to stay in great shape to do them, too. By the way, you look like you're in awesome shape. What kind of work? You're a trainer? What kind of workouts?
I ride a bicycle a lot.
I've
done it for so long. This old guy, when I was boxing down at Hollywood Y in my 20s, mm-hmm. said he was in great shape. But I asked him how. He said, if you take care of yourself in your 20s and your 30s, the rest will take care of itself.
Well, I'm 39. I still got time.
Well, it's the truth, though, you know, because you form habits and
yeah.
that's just what you do. Plus, I'm vain.
Fair enough. Do you wish you would have done more movies with Randy, with your brother?
Well, we did several. We did The Long Riders. We did True West off Broadway for a year and between there and Hollywood. And we did kind of a Saturday Night Live thing. They were going to do it as a primetime show. It's called Primetime. A couple other movies. But I don't have any regrets, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Must have been fun being in a movie with your brother. Have you done anything with Jack? No, right?
No, kind of intentionally. You know, Jack wanted to offer to help him with an agent, and he said, no, Dad, I want to do it myself. And
yeah.
then, you know, the first thing he got was Hunger Games, and then he's doing Vinyl, you know, with Scorsese.
Sure.
And, you know, now he's got The Boys, which is like maybe the biggest show on TV.
It's killing it.
So I have no qualms about asking him for help.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't you have him throw you apart?
A little boost over here, man. Throw me a bone. It's yeah. fine.
I raised
you. Tried it all. Exactly.
It's the least you could do.
No, I'm very, very proud of him.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, as well you should be.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in, man. I appreciate it.
I'm so glad to be here. I really had a great time.
Same here. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Big thank you to Dennis Quaid. His new podcast is called The Bear and the Banjo. Link to that will be in the show notes. There's a video of this interview on our YouTube channel at jordanharbinger.com/YouTube. And there are also worksheets for each episode. So you can review what you've learned here from Dennis Quaid. Those will also be at jordanharbinger.com in the show notes. And we've also got transcripts now for every episode. And those can be found in the show notes as well. We're teaching you how to connect with great people and manage relationships using systems and tiny habits over at our 6-minute networking course, which is free, over at jordanharbinger.com/course. I know you think you don't have time right now, you got to do it later. Dig the well before you get thirsty. Once you need relationships, you're too late to make them. Procrastination leads to stagnation. You ever get a call from someone, you haven't heard from them in 2 years and they want something? Don't let that be you. Take a few minutes each day, be consistent. I wish I knew this stuff 20 years ago. It's not fluff. It's crucial both for business and personal success, if you will. Find it all for free at jordanharbinger.com/course. By the way, most of the guests here on the show, they subscribe to the course and the newsletter. So come join us and you'll be in some smart company. Speaking of building relationships, you can always reach out and follow me on social. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram. This show is created in association with Podcast One. This episode was produced by Jen Harbinger, Jason DeFilippo, and edited by Jace Sanderson. Show notes and worksheets by Robert Fogarty. Music by Evan Viola, and I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. Our advice and opinions and those of our guests are their own. And yes, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer. So do your own research before implementing anything you hear on the show. And remember, we rise by lifting others. The fee for this show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting, which should be in every episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time. Check out Business Casual. It's a new podcast by Morning Brew. Every week, host Kinsey Grant sits down with the biggest names in business to talk about the biggest stories in business. They've been diving into topics like the future of the flexible workspace, what's actually happening with the trade war, and whether or not we should break up big tech. This week, they're tackling the streaming wars with none other than Matthew Ball. Subscribe to Business Casual wherever you listen to podcasts.